One of the big mistakes that people make when they're thinking through an idea is they think they need to see the full, complete picture from A to Z. And if they can't see A to Z, then they don't do A. And the answer is that the board is always changing, and your position changes on the board as you step forward. And so you don't know what getting started will allow you to have going forward, because you just can't see A to Z. And so when you get started, first off, people are impressed by it, that you just try it. And then some of them are going to want to help you. And then you're going to meet people and actually have a reason to talk to them now that you had no reason to before. And that's why having this bias for action coupled with a culture of failure acceptance to say, you know what, I'm not going to get burned reputationally if this doesn't work out, because this is what this place does, is people are willing to try and support local initiatives and new people who are trying things out. And you can know that things are going to change. We know that's a constant. So all I'm going to do is basically step out in faith and say, we're going to find out where the board is when I get to the next square, and then we'll play the game from there.
Entrepreneurship is something we talk about a lot in Chattanooga, and even on this podcast. And today's episode seeks to dig into that in an intentional way. So what exactly is entrepreneurship? And what would it mean to approach entrepreneurship as a way of life? And what does it really mean for a community to support entrepreneurship? Kevin Cherick is my guest today to help explore these questions. Kevin is an entrepreneur, and more importantly, a newcomer to Chattanooga, who shares a unique perspective on our community. This is the Camp House Podcast, and I am your host, Matt Busby. Kevin, well, welcome to the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, so today's guest is Kevin Cherick, and we are going to be discussing entrepreneurship, which I'm sure most of my listeners know. This has been, you know, a general theme of the podcast from the very beginning. You know, a lot of the people I've had on are entrepreneurs, and that's something we talk about with Chattanooga all the time, is entrepreneurship and how this is such a great place for entrepreneurship. Well, I think with Kevin today, what we want to do is actually talk more about that. Like, what is entrepreneurship? And how and why is Chattanooga a good place to be an entrepreneur? And what does that look like? And then I think we're going to get more into Kevin's story, where he can even share about some of the barriers to entrepreneurship and kind of what it took for him to really to sort of embrace entrepreneurship as a lifestyle. And so, Kevin, before we get into all that, you know, tell us a little bit about yourself. You haven't been in Chattanooga very long, correct?
No, I actually moved here in February of this year, 2017. Like many, I came because we have a family connection. My in-laws live here and have lived here for 15 years or so. And I married my bride, Joy, for 11 years. We have 5 kids, 3 boys, 2 girls, ages 8 to 2. And so we've really enjoyed the temperate weather coming from Phoenix, Arizona, where we were trapped inside the house for 3 or 4 months a year. Yeah, it's been a real eye-opener. Just what this community, it's lived up to all the billing that my father-in-law was kept sending me newspaper articles about how great Chattanooga is. It'd be so awesome for me. I was like, yeah, Chattanooga. But he was right.
Yeah, that's good. Well, and so you guys have been out here since February of 2017. And, you know, we're having you on talking about entrepreneur. Have you always been an entrepreneur? Talk about that journey through your life and kind of what that means to you.
I think I aspired to be an entrepreneur when I was a kid, and I didn't, you know, entrepreneur is like based on a French word, so it's like you don't know how to spell it, you barely know how to say it, it's this really intimidating word, but I tried to put some things together when I was a kid. I mean, I had, you know, a bunch of paper routes, just trying to make money, but when I tried to do my own thing, it really didn't catch, like it didn't work at all. I was living in Florida, and we would try to, you know, do lawn service. Well, in Florida, there are legitimate professional lawn services that everyone has. And I was such a perfectionist that, yeah, you know, the job that I would do, if I was going to charge a stranger money, needed to be on the par with these professionals. And that meant mowing. It meant edging. And so I needed all this equipment that we didn't necessarily have just for our house. My parents actually, in lieu of getting an edger, which I felt I needed to do the job, they got me what literally looks like an ice skate with a handle, about a 6-foot handle that you step on and you walk the ice skate down the edge of the sidewalk to edge the lawn. And that was just not to my professional standards as a 14-year-old. And it didn't do curves very well. I butchered this guy's lawn. And so I was so humiliated that I refused to go out anymore and try to, you know, sell my services to people. Because I knew they could get really professional work done really inexpensively. And so it never really kind of took. I'd say the turning point for me was I was in college. And we had moved across the country in high school. And my parents introduced me to a family friend of theirs that they knew through church. And this guy was a former university professor, and he owned 3 franchise retail stores around the Seattle area. And he'd owned them, opened his first one 7 years earlier, and he basically, as far as I could tell, did nothing. he was in his mid-40s. He went to a manager's meeting once a month. He paid for my brother and my father to accompany him and his son on a trip to Italy because they wanted the company. And I had no idea that every town has small business owners who are very successful, and you have no idea who they are. I thought, you know, you have to start some giant, you know, Henry Ford. Right. Like, that's an entrepreneur.
Right.
And I was at college with, you know, a finance degree. It's like you're going to go to Wall Street and do 2 years as an analyst and then get your MBA. And, you know, that's what my classmates did. And I realized that there was, you know, a different path that was a little bit more creative, gave you a little bit more control. And I didn't have to wait in line, you know, to serve my time.
Yeah.
And that was really appealing to me. So that kind of got me going.
Yeah, so was it, when you know, you're talking about your friend in Seattle, and you could see, what does he do? He doesn't do anything. This is awesome. This is what I want to do.
This is my dream.
Right, right. But it doesn't take too long once you sort of take on this mantle of entrepreneurship and you realize this is what you want to do, to realize that is not the case. That is not what an entrepreneur's life's like at all. And so, you know, so I want to get into that. You know, let's talk about the entrepreneurship as a philosophy. And I know this is something you're really passionate about, not only for your own life, but you're really passionate about spreading this message of what entrepreneurship actually looks like, and getting people to sort of embrace that. Whether that means, you know, quitting your job and starting a company is almost irrelevant, but understanding sort of the principles by which you sort of approach life. So talk to us about entrepreneurship as a philosophy.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, first thing I want to do is define what I mean by entrepreneurship. I am allergic to jargon, and I'm constantly asking people, what do they mean by fill in the blank? Because we all tend to use words, and I don't know that we know what they mean. So entrepreneurship, when I say entrepreneurship, and when I say an entrepreneur, I mean that someone has a philosophy by which they believe the world can be improved, and they have the power to do that. And so, you know, that looks a lot of different ways. Sometimes people talk about, you know, making a dent in the universe. You know, we're going to change the world. And it's every, you know, food delivery app is, we're changing the world. And so that's what I mean. And one of the things that...
So for you, it's the bottom line, it's empowerment.
Yeah. You have the opportunity to create your world. Steve Jobs mentioned that when you realize that the world as we know it was created by people no smarter than you, you know, that's a really empowering message. Yeah. And I've always been motivated by the fact that, man, if that guy can do it, you know, playing football, rushing a fraternity, starting a business, if this guy can do it, and I think I'm way better than this guy because we're all, you know, Lake Wobegon citizens and we're all above average, that really helps me understand, how do I develop and how do I take one step forward to improve my life, the life of my family, the life of my community, and the life of the world ultimately?
Well, talk about, you know, with entrepreneurship too, I know you have a certain bias, and that's towards action. You know, so if sort of the first part of this definition, what is entrepreneurship, is empowerment, the next natural step to that is sort of this bias to action. So talk about that.
Yeah, I stole this from this entrepreneur named Ben Casnoka, who started a company while he was in high school and was literally selling software to city managers all over the state of California while he was cutting class. And he said, look, you have to have a bias for action. And this is the main differentiator between, you know, what some people call like wantrepreneurs and people who are actually doing it, is having a bias for action. Because, you know, studies have shown that when you watch something happen or you consume information about something, you get the chemical feeling like you did it, right? When we watch Tom Brady throw a touchdown, man, I feel the same way as if I threw a touchdown. You know, I'll never forget coming out of Mission Impossible, the original Mission Impossible with Tom Cruise, probably not the original. You know, let me tell you, you don't get in my way when I'm walking in the parking lot because I'm like a spy. And so we have to fight that urge, because we can get the chemical reaction of feeling like we've accomplished something by reading books, listening to podcasts, watching YouTube videos with Gary Vaynerchuk, who's amazing. But Gary will be the first one to tell you, stop consuming this material and go produce. And so having a bias for action means that if you're not every day or every week taking some small step forward towards testing your idea or your dream for how the world might change to match your vision, then you're really not living out the philosophy of entrepreneurship.
Okay, so we're at empowerment, a bias towards action. And then, you know, the next thing you talk about is a need for a powerful network. Why is a network important to, especially for people who see this world and they want to change the world? You know, another way of saying everything we just said. Why is it important to have a network in order to do that? Isn't being an entrepreneur all about being an individual? Like, isn't that what it's all
about?
Yeah,
the solo founder, right? Zuck just hacking together Facebook one random weekend, and then it's worth, you know, hundreds of billions of dollars. This was my actually like big mistake when I was a young entrepreneur, was trying to do everything myself. And the reality is that the larger your vision, the less capable you are of bringing it to fruition. And so what a lot of entrepreneurs have to be able to do is to create a team. I mean, I kind of use this image of like the Avengers, like we're going to assemble a super team because I have weaknesses. And so everyone does. And recognizing your own strengths and weaknesses and where you need to fill in your gaps with a team member is so important. The only way that happens is if you have a network ahead of time. If you've been cultivating, it sounds maybe kind of slimy, but cultivating a network of people who like you, share your vision for the world and your philosophy, and have complementary skill sets and personalities. And sometimes, right, those complementary personalities can create some friction, but it's the only way that you can actually move forward. And so once you get past the side hustle concept of entrepreneurship, you really need other people's help to accomplish anything great, and you can only do that through a network.
Well, and you know, even I think this next piece actually goes into that. You know, when we think about entrepreneurship, again, so one of the myths, I almost feel like we're dispelling myths at the same time, right? Like talking about, you know, isn't the entrepreneur just an individual? No, they actually rely on this enormous network. Well, isn't the entrepreneur always the most successful person? And that's not true either, right? And so failure is a huge piece about what it means to be an entrepreneur. So what does it mean to have a culture of failure acceptance?
Yeah, from a community perspective, it's really important. Because if you have to hit a home run your only time up to base, you're not going to get many people who score.
Right, yeah.
And so, you know, I haven't even figured this out yet in Chattanooga because I'm still on my first at bat here in Chattanooga. But a culture of failure acceptance is, when someone puts themselves out there, being an entrepreneur is being extremely vulnerable. When you say, hey, here's this new thing, either that doesn't exist or that I want you to choose instead of a currently available options, you know, you're putting yourself out for rejection. And as we know, you know, lots of entrepreneurial ideas, they just don't make it. They die on the vine. And you have to have bad ideas to figure out what good ideas are and develop the process by which you can really midwife these ideas into companies. So if you're going to have an entrepreneurial ecosystem, what happens when somebody comes in there full of energy, they got a great idea, and they start doing it, and a year later, it flops? It's just they run out of momentum, they run out of cash, they got distracted by a squirrel going by. How does the community react when that person comes up with their next idea and says, oh, Kevin, he never follows through, dude. He tried that crazy idea and, you know, I tried to support him. I did support him. You know, I was a customer and I gave him feedback And he didn't make it happen. So I'm not going to give him any more benefit of the doubt because I already did that and he blew it.
Yeah.
There's a book that talks about the studies show that the average successful entrepreneur wasn't successful until their 3.7th company.
Yeah. Wow.
So the average entrepreneur has to have four companies before they figure out product market fit, how do I manage, what's my financing plan, all these things. And so having a culture of failure acceptance in a community means that, you know, you're not going to have to move across town if you fail.
Yeah. Well, and I love the baseball analogy, right? Like, you know, baseball players, you know, you're considered good if 4 out of 10 times you hit the ball.
Yeah.
Right. And so, yeah, that sort of batting at a 300 average, when it comes to baseball, that's a great baseball player. And that would be a great entrepreneur in this case as well.
Oh yeah.
You know? And so, yeah, you have to put your ideas out there. You have to be testing them. And some of them are going to succeed. Some of them are going to fail. And more often than not, those aren't going to be good. And so, you know, as an entrepreneur, like, how have you personally found ways sort of, well, talk about your own failures. Like how many ideas have you had that you've tried that you're not doing now that didn't work out? And how do you deal with that?
Well, most of your ideas never see the light of day because they're not within your scope of competence.
Yeah.
Right. So for years, my whole family, we're huge ideators and we just throw ideas out left, right, and center. You drive down the road and we've got 1,000 ideas for every business on the side of every street. And so we come up with ideas that we're in no position to execute on. Like, I literally have a great idea to improve Google search. Now, I dropped out of CS 101 the first semester.
Yeah.
I'm pretty sure the 100,000 people working for Google have figured it out.
Yeah.
But I have this whole browser idea that says, well, instead of hyperlinks, they should be voting based off of the browser. Mm-hmm. Of, you know, when I vote, I go there. If I go deeper into that page, that means I'm there. If I'm scrolling down, the time I spend on there, if I go back, that's a downvote, right? Like, how do we get better search results? But I cannot do that. And I can't.
Right.
I mean, if I were to try to build a team to do that, I mean, it's ridiculous. I can't do it. So, you know, I mean, my latest failure was my last business, frankly. I owned a gym in Scottsdale, Arizona for 8 years. And every year, 50% growth. And we moved around town, and as one area got a lot more competition, we'd pioneer new geographic markets and build that up. And we got it up to $50,000 a month in revenue. And, you know, I was retired. I was like, this is amazing. I mean, I went to Seattle for 6 weeks, and it was awesome. And we saw more and more competition come up. I said, look, I'm in a 5-year lease. I can't keep moving every time 4 gyms open up within 2 miles.
Yeah.
And fundamentally, I was unwilling to adapt to the market because I had what Scott Adams calls, the Dilbert cartoonist, he calls the artist's curse of, I have real passionate opinions about how people should be training in the gym.
Yeah.
And I'm unwilling to adapt that vision to what they want.
Yeah.
So if they want to go do something else, I'm not going to say what because I don't offend anyone, right? They're doing it wrong. You need to be squatting heavy, right? Doing high intensity interval training, and it needs to look like this. And so then you're in a marketing thing. So we saw a 2-year slide where it was just revenues going down. I had to lay people off, you know, give them a little hint like you should start looking for another job.
Yeah.
Until finally, a default on a lease that had literally hundreds of thousands of dollars left on it. And to double down on that, when we started like wrapping things up, they're like, yeah, you got a personal guarantee on this. I was like, no, I don't. No, that personal guarantee, it's a 2-year personal guarantee and I'm past 2 years. And even though I knew like 2 weeks ahead of time, right? Like, oh, I'm going to default on this lease. Like I'm shutting this thing down. I trusted my memory. You know, I think I'm a pretty young guy. I'm 36 years old. Like my memory's pretty good. I had to increase my security deposit $10,000 to get the lease to fall off.
Yeah.
And I didn't do that. And so for $10,000, you know, they're sending me notices like attorneys and all this kind of thing. Like you owe us $278,000, $562 and 42 cents. But what you learn as an entrepreneur is rules are flexible. Everything can be negotiated. You know what your position is. You know, my position is, look, I don't have anything except for IRAs. So I don't own a home. This is the real sell for entrepreneurship. I don't own a home, right? Yeah. Both cars are 12 years old or older. You want to come collect this car, go ahead. And you know the laws that say, like, if they want to sue me, like, you're basically judgment proof. So I end up settling 3 years at $12,000 was my rent every month. 3 years remaining on the lease for $20,000. Wow. So I basically consider the additional $10,000 to be what Dave Ramsey calls stupid tax. I was stupid and I had to pay that tax. And then I had to leave town. I moved across the country to the warm embrace of Chattanooga.
Well, I do want to get into talking about Chattanooga, but first, you know, something that you talk about right there, and we really do want to talk about some barriers to entrepreneurship, and I think this is a big one, but, you know, just listening to you talk, you sound like a very, you're not a risk-averse person, right? And so in order to be an entrepreneur, do you have to be somebody who can tolerate risk?
Yeah, so that's another one of those myths, right, is that entrepreneurs are the crazy risk takers. I read an article once that tried to figure out how long would Batman survive in the real world, given the risks that Bruce Wayne takes. And the answer that they came up with is he would never survive longer than 3 years.
Yeah.
Like, he would be killed because every night he takes a mortal risk. And that when you do, you know, Monte Carlo simulations, which is what finance dorks do to figure out what the expected values are of different investments, if you take risk over and over and over again, you're going to come up bankrupt. And so you cannot take, in fact, the best entrepreneurs are incredible risk managers. And so, you know, for me, when I sat there and was ready to sign this 5-year deal at 5 times my current rent on a huge space on the busiest road in town, I knew, I said, guys, you want me to sign this personal guarantee? It's fine. But there's nothing behind it here, fellas. I mean, you guys can know that. I mean, they're seeing all the P&Ls. They know what they're getting into and balance sheets and so on. So what it really is an entrepreneur manages their risk, never bets the whole company on one decision. You know, Jeff Bezos talks about this all the time. I mean, you're never going to make a decision that it has to work or the company is sunk.
Yeah.
And, you know, there are different times to make different size bets and take different risks. And, you know, when you're young, you can take more risks. If you don't have a family of 7, you can take more risks. If you don't have a mortgage, you can take more risks. And so what we do is we really manage our family risk across different asset classes. And so, you know, one of the reasons why we rent is because I want the flexibility that if our income drops precipitously, you know, it's a lot easier to break a lease or when it comes up to move to a less expensive place than it is to sell a house in a hurry.
Well, let's get into talking about the community of Chattanooga, because, like, this is a community focused podcast. And so, something we talk about a lot, and that Chattanooga itself has been very conscious of and talks about a lot over the last sort of decade now, is that this is a place where we want to support entrepreneurs. We want this to be an entrepreneurship haven here in Chattanooga. And so, you know, as an entrepreneur coming into this environment, this culture, I kind of would love to hear about that coming from you. So, you know, what is it about Chattanooga that makes it a cradle for entrepreneurs?
Well, the first thing that makes a place friendly to entrepreneurs is the culture. And, you know, moving here from Phoenix, Arizona, I moved from a city with 5.5 million people in the metro area. You know, Scottsdale, the city that I lived in, was 250,000 people right next to Phoenix. But there really wasn't. Maybe it's just because it was too big. I mean, I did Startup Week in Phoenix and did all these things. And there really, you didn't know how to get in with other entrepreneurs. There was a distance there that I perceived, even though I was a small business owner and had multiple businesses in town over 10 years. And so the thing that really made it stand out for me was how active and deliberate the community is here to improve Chattanooga as a whole. I mean, that's the theme of your podcast, is you have people on every time who are doing incredible actions, galvanizing their community, organizing and people around them to be able to improve one segment of their community. Now, whether that be private business, an entrepreneur, or a nonprofit, or a public-private partnership, there's been decades where that's been in the water, so to speak, here at Chattanooga. And so when I got here, I really didn't know what I was going to do. I didn't have an idea for a business. I was working my day job. I was kind of like a failed serial entrepreneur, and I was trying to find my footing, quite frankly. And so I just started talking to people and starting with, you know, my father-in-law's lived here forever, and he had introduced me to Hal Bowling at launch.
Yep.
and Chuck Grant, who owns a number of different businesses in town. And so then I just started talking with them and asking for help. And I didn't even know what to ask help for. I mean, that's the big thing, that when you've never done it before, you want the roadmap, mm-hmm. the blueprint. Yeah. Like, what do I do? I was talking to some UTC students last night and talking about how, you know, these girls came up, they're freshmen, they're dual marketing and entrepreneurship majors. And I was like, do you know that one of the greatest marketers in the world has an office in Chattanooga, Tennessee? And they're like, no.
Yeah.
Who?
Yeah.
Right? And I give this whole thing, like, if I were in your shoes, I would be at VaynerMedia.
It's Gary Vaynerchuk for everybody who doesn't know that.
And I would be like, okay, I'm a freshman at UTC and I want to learn everything about what you guys do here. I will do whatever it takes. Can I shadow for a day? Can I do an informational meeting? Whatever. And one of the girls, you know, they're nodding for 10 minutes as I'm just rambling on, right? And then one of the girls goes, but what do I say? And I said, I don't know. Like, we never know what to do. But you got to walk down there and go through the door, and I don't know what's behind door number one, and have a plan B, C, and D. It's like, well, do I just talk to the receptionist or talk to someone else? Be like, talk to whoever the first person is and say, my name is so-and-so, and here's what I want. How can I help you? And I even put together this whole thing on how, you know, they can be the community arm to help local entrepreneurs that they really can't help.
Right. Yep.
Because they just don't have a business model that allows them to afford VaynerMedia. VaynerMedia works with Toyota. Mm-hmm. They work with General Mills, right? Like, the local HVAC installer can't afford them. But it would be great PR, perhaps, to say, oh, we got a couple of UTC students. They shadow us for 3 months, and then they go put that knowledge into action with local entrepreneurs who can't do it. And by the way, I'm going to start this now, and then next year I'll run your intern program for you. And you're putting together a portfolio, but how do you do it? I don't know.
Yeah.
They might say, get out. And then you got to decide, are you going to take no for an answer?
Yeah. It's that bias towards action that we talked about at the very beginning. So, you know, keep going with this as far as what it is that makes Chattanooga such a great place for entrepreneurs. And, you know, what I really love about your answer, and I agree with it, is you're saying it's the culture, meaning it's not necessarily about government structure or taxes or even the property costs, like none of those things. It's about
the education
people,
quality.
Right, or education, right. Yeah.
It's
about the people creating a culture that supports entrepreneurs. So keep going with that.
Yeah, I could not believe that people would sit down with me and have a coffee meeting. And, you know, I would read about people in the paper and reach out to them, and they would sit down for coffee with a complete stranger who knows no one, honestly. And I have nothing of value to give them, which is breaking rule number one, which is like, bring some value to the table. So I have a real interest in education. I'm fascinated by what's going on with Hamilton County schools. You know, I did some volunteer work for a real short time with Macaulay. Like, we've got this private school situation. We've got public schools. We've got a huge homeschooling community in the area. And so I see Tiffany Robinson is on the school board. And she's some kind of real estate developer, entrepreneur. I don't even know what. And I just say, hey, like, can I meet you for coffee somewhere? And the first thing I ask her when she says yes and sits down is, why are you taking this meeting? And she says, I don't know. It's just what we do here. And that has been the consistent answer, is everyone takes your meeting. And you're like, I don't know how I can help you, but I'll promise you, I'll be able to down the road. Thank you for bringing this meeting. And what that means is, the importance about that is that the networks in Chattanooga are not in membership-only men's clubs. right? Bring your jacket, bring your cigar. They are accessible, but you have to do the work of identifying and taking that first step to say, hey, I want to meet, I want to find out what you're doing. And Never Eat Alone by Keith Ferrazzi is like the greatest networking book that I've seen, but that takes a lot of gumption for a lot of people to say, I don't feel like I have anything to offer, but can I take 20 minutes of your time? And I've been shocked at the generosity of spirit broadly in the community here to give that time with no expectation. I mean, I really, you know, I work remotely. I'm the only person in my company who's in Tennessee. I didn't have any way that I could really pay these folks back. And I've lived all around the country, Matt. I've lived in Seattle. I've lived in Dallas. I've lived in Hartford. I've lived in Orlando. I've lived in Phoenix. I've lived in St. Louis. I've never seen an openness to talking with people and letting you know what's going on. And there are so many public spaces that have events that you can go to, and you just start making small talk with people, and they say, let's have a coffee. And I go, why do you want to have coffee with me? You know, and you know, a cynic might grab their wallet and go, I know why. But no, they know. The people here who are active and intentional and deliberate understand that the power of people is the only way that we can move our society forward and our community here in Chattanooga. And it is inspiring to be a part of and to see.
Yeah, that's really exciting. And I love how we talk about the Innovation District a lot, and the need and the desire of the Innovation District to be as open and inclusive as possible. And we've done some episodes on that. But, you know, I'd really love for you to talk about your experience with the Innovation District and the EDNY and kind of what you did. Like, I'm here, then this is open door, but what does that mean? Because I think you know, we can make sort of the entrepreneurship culture of Chattanooga, the Innovation District of Chattanooga, as open as possible, but it will still require you walking through the door, right? And so, yeah, talk about your experience with the EDNY.
Yeah. You know, like I said, prepping to move to Chattanooga, I listened to every Camp House podcast and it was so inspiring. And I'll never forget, you said, and you've reiterated this, you've said, dude, I've seen people come show up at the coffee shop and like basically for like network their way into jobs.
Yep.
But to also say, like, you don't have to be a superhuman, I didn't know how to do that. Mm-hmm. Like, I couldn't see myself hanging around a coffee shop, like, trying to catch random people's eyes who are wearing suits and be like, hey, I'm a valuable potential employee. Like, I don't know how that works. People can do that, which is great. And what that tells you is there's so many different styles of this philosophy of entrepreneurship. So I don't know what to do that. And I don't drink coffee. And so I really don't know what to do.
That is a shame and unfortunate. That last admission.
Yeah. And so all I heard about, you know, Innovation District, and the EDNY is the front door to the Innovation District. And I didn't know, like, what does that even mean? Again, I'm always asking people, what do you mean by that? Because I don't know what people mean. And I think I even maybe like one time did a walkthrough where I like chickened out and left. But one afternoon I had some free time during the week and I said, you know what? I got to make something happen. And that goes back to the bias for action. If you're not satisfied, heck, if you're not delighted, if you're not psyched with what's going on in your life, be it, and you can take this to every aspect of life, right? Relationally, spiritually, professionally, you know, your hobbies, whatever. Then I'm a huge believer in shuffling the deck. Is you just got to take some action. Do something, right? Yeah. So I show up and I just go, I'm going to go floor to floor through the EDNY, introducing myself to everyone who gives me anything except an absolute stop sign. So I go to the first floor. Collab. Okay, what do you guys do here? And I don't even have any idea, right? Yeah. They're like telling me about all these opportunities and this sort of thing. And I go, well, I don't have any idea. What should I do? And they're like, well, I don't know. Like, we can set you up for a way paver meeting or something. I was like, okay, great. Because I just was going to meet somebody.
Yeah.
And then I went up the stairs to the second floor. What's here? Oh, this is Tech Town. Oh, what do you do here? And Kevin Love gives me a tour of Tech Town. And then I work my way up floor by floor, saying hello to people. By the way, Does everyone understand that it's not normal to pass a stranger and get eye contact and a greeting? Like, that doesn't happen in New York City, right? So I just love it. So I get to the sixth floor, and that's Society of Work, which is a co-working space. And I meet right when I come through the elevators, right? Mary Stargell's at her desk, and she is, you know, who knows? I mean, people have all these different jobs and roles, and I can't even get it straight, right? Like, when you say, what do you do, Matt? It's like, ugh.
Yep.
She does everything. She's in charge of the whole building. She works for Society of Work. She's done 1,000 of things. She was just in Europe for some grant thing.
And she knows I'm very jealous of the fact that she got to go to Amsterdam to a placemaking conference.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And so she obviously, because I had just flashing neon lights over my head, lost. And she said, you need a tour. I was like, yes. And so then she started walking me the sixth and the seventh floor. So now I had my tour guide. You know, I start talking to people about autonomous cars. It's one of these like random passions that I had, which is awesome because it wasn't, you know, my day job that they don't care about. It's like this weird thing. And I've got this wildly optimistic view on when it's going to happen. It's going to change all of society. And it's crazy. My 8-year-old will never have a driver's license. And so I start meeting people. And then because it's Chattanooga, you keep running into people, right?
Yep.
And keep in mind, I work out of my house.
Yeah,
I work out of a spare bedroom. Like, I literally have no reason to be downtown ever.
Right.
But you make it a point to come downtown, and then you start running into people over and over again, and you, like, slyly, like, connecting with them on LinkedIn. Like, that's the okay thing to do. Like, you don't friend people on Facebook. That's too close. But you can, like, connect on LinkedIn. And all of a sudden, out of that, going level by level, floor by floor, being introduced to everyone at the EDNY, I meet Jason Luna, Nirav Patel. They've got an office there on the 9th floor, Rapid RMS. They get accepted into Techstars, which is this super prestigious accelerator in Atlanta. I'm down here like stalking the 5th floor. Like, I just sit in the 5th floor because that's like community space. And I run into Jason one day, and he just goes, hey, what are you doing? I was like, oh, I don't know, you know, nothing. And he says, well, I'm in Atlanta for the next 6 weeks. Why don't you use our office? So then I've got a key to an office at the EDNY.
Yeah.
And then a few weeks later, you know, Mary puts me on the Slack for the EDNY building. So now I can get into the building 24/7. They've got it figured out where you can, this is unbelievable, you can type into Slack on the EDNY building, like unlock at any time, and the doors unlock. So if you're there outside of business hours. So I'm brand new, right? I knew no one 6 months ago. I've got an office, unfettered access to, like, I don't know, 300 megabyte or gigabit, the fastest internet in the history of the world. People that I'm seeing on the 6th floor, the 1st floor, on and on and on it goes. You know, the next thing I know, I come up with an idea. The next thing I know, you know, the people at CoLab are helping me out and helping me kind of formulate this idea. The next thing I know, Marco Perez at Launch is acting as an advisor and mentor to me. The next thing I know, I'm pitching at Will This Float. And I run into a guy at the camp house. He goes, oh, I know you from Will This Float. And that happens to me all the time. And from a dead stop, right, a dead standing start, you generate all this momentum. Got to be willing to be vulnerable. Got to be put yourself out there. You know, something I read somewhere, somebody said, if you fall flat on your face, at least you're falling forward.
Well, yeah. And I think, you know, that the reason I wanted you to tell that story is that I think that story shows why Chattanooga is such a great space for entrepreneurs. And, you know, there's one more myth that I actually want us to dispel. And I want you to tell us about your current business idea, your current company, as we're talking about this. And that myth is, like, in order to be an entrepreneur, you have to raise a ton of money and quit your day job and just go full on risk and just be 100% in on this. And one of the most beautiful things happening within entrepreneurship right now is something called side hustles.
Yes.
And so talk about side hustles, of how this is like such an awesome entry point into entrepreneurship for most people, and your new kind of idea, Infinite Closet.
Yeah, side hustles have been getting a lot of traction in certain portions of the internet that I lurk in.
That sounds really creepy.
Yeah, and it really starts. This guy Ramit Sethi, has this website called I Will Teach You to Be Rich, which also sounds terrible. And a second site that he started called Growth Lab, which is a little bit better. And he realized that most people who are interested in entrepreneurship don't necessarily want to quit their job.
Yeah.
They just want to have some extra income. And so he started building these courses, and then he laid everything out in this like $3 ebook that you can buy on Amazon about...
And we'll put links to that in the show notes for this episode.
About how to generate $1,000 on the side, like in a month. And because if you can generate $1,000, you've done all the parts of creating a company and creating income. You have come up with an idea for a service or a product. You have found customers to test it out. You have positioned, how are you going to get customers? Like, that's what we call marketing. Like, how do you help people figure it out? And what this really does is, you know, if you think about the marginal increase in income, if somebody, you just can't go to your boss typically and say, hey, I'd love a $12,000 a year raise because I've been here for 10 years.
Yeah.
And whatever the reason is, right? I mean, they're just going, hey, look, 2% and it comes next March. You know the deal.
Yeah.
So when you take your side time and spend some time learning the processes by which you go to market, you get customer feedback, you change what you're doing. If you don't, you go out of business to what they want. Then you are empowered to take control of your labor, your creativity, to take that income, and you can do whatever you want with it. You can max your 401k and IRA. You can go on vacation. You can lease a ridiculously expensive Lamborghini for $1,000 a month if that's what you want to do. And so lots of people have jumped on this concept and really built out this vision of like, oh, side hustles. This is a legit thing, and here's how you do it. Chris Guillebeau has this incredible podcast that's daily case studies called the Side Hustle School Podcast. And every day, these things are like 8 minutes.
Yeah, they're podcasts. Like 5 minutes. They're not long at all.
They take these people, and honestly, one of the things that I love about it is some of the ideas are so stupid. You go, why am I not already basically retired with six side hustles? Like, you put them together, it's all one. Yeah. One person made hundreds of thousands of dollars making chicken saddles. These are leather saddles that go on live chickens. I don't know anything about it except for it's stuck in my head.
Yeah.
One guy makes $700 a month with a blog, which its design is terrible. I went to it, that does aquarium reviews.
Yeah.
And then he makes his money off of advertising and Amazon links, right? Yeah. Like affiliate links. And you just go, okay, at some point, if I'm not spending $30 with GoDaddy and WordPress to try out stupid stuff to just see what's going to catch, then I have no one to blame but myself, because I'm looking around and thousands and millions of people are creating what is valuable to someone.
Yeah.
And it's just not valuable to me.
And really, what's both of those ideas came from that Chris Guillebeau podcast, Side Hustle School. And what's amazing about that is, you know, Chris is an entrepreneur and he's committed to doing these one a day. So there's not like only four or five of these ideas that have actually worked out there. Like, there's hundreds and hundreds and hundreds. And he's, you know, he's giving a new story every single day this year on Side Hustle School podcast. And so, you know, tell us a little bit about your idea right now, like the new project you're working on. You show up in Chattanooga with sort of no, you know, very few relationships. Yeah. And now you are, you know, going 100 miles an hour with this new idea called Infinite Closet. So tell us about that real quick and some of the connections you made to make that happen.
Yeah, this, you know, people ask me how I came up with the idea, and I like to make 30-year-old movie references. So I tell them I was hanging a clock while standing on a toilet and I slipped and hit my head. But of course, everyone knows that's how Doc Brown invented the flux capacitor. And if you don't know what that is, just Google it and rent it. So basically, I had this interest in autonomous cars. Like, couldn't be more jacked about autonomous cars. Started a Twitter handle called Auto Chattanooga that is anonymous. Like, this is the only way people know that I'm behind it. And it's just news about autonomous cars and, you know, what's Carta doing here locally and, you know, everything local and so on and so forth. And so I'm just studying this. And this is like a key point of entrepreneurship is you don't know where the intersection of different mm-hmm. things are going to come together to create this amazing idea. And that's really where this stuff comes from. Scott Adams, again, the Dilbert cartoonist, has this incredible book called How to Fail at Almost Everything and Still Be a Success. And he talks about he's not that funny. He's not that good of a cartoonist or an artist. He's not very successful in the corporate world. But you take those three things together, and he's world class at Dilbert, right? And Steve Jobs talked about this with, you know, topography and this intersection of liberal arts and science. And so I had been studying autonomous cars, and I can't build an autonomous car, right? Like, I don't have the background. This is the Google web browser. Like,
right. It's a pretty big barrier to entry.
Yeah, I just don't have the skills. And even if I did, you need to go raise $1 billion and then say, great, Elon Musk, I'm going to eat your lunch. It's just not going to happen. But somehow I got hooked on this idea of storage units and how storage units work, and the idea that, you know, I've had lots of storage units because I've moved so frequently. And I know how they work. You take your stuff, you fill up a storage unit. Going to the storage unit is not how you'd like to spend your afternoon.
No, it's terrible.
If you are cheap like I am, you maximize the smallest possible storage unit so that if you're really crushing the storage unit game, when you open the garage roll-up door, it's just a wall of cardboard boxes, right? Because you pay by the square foot. And so you need to go vertically. And then you don't know where anything is. So you really can't, like, conveniently store in and out on it. It's like, I'm moving, so I need to put stuff in there for a week. Or, you know, traveling around the country or whatever it is. And I started to research this a little bit and find out what the business model is. And it's unbelievable because ultimately it's a real estate. I mean, you're renting real estate,
right?
But you will only store close to where you live because you don't want to drive 40 minutes to get to your storage unit, which means the real estate values are about what you're paying for your, wherever you live,
your apartment
or your home or what have you. Now, and then there are people who are doing, like, they're combining bellhops with a storage unit on the back end. Like, they'll bring movers to you, take all your stuff, and then go put it in storage. And when you have a delivery component there, you know, then that changes the real estate arbitrage, right? You can put the storage,
you know,
40 miles out, and who cares, because I'm never going to have to go out there. They're going to bring it in and out. And so that allows you to service people for whom they don't have storage on site because their residential square footage is expensive. And then you're paying cheap for the giant warehouse out in the boondocks. Well, autonomous cars changes everything. Because if the big – that business that I just described is all about the delivery cost and labor cost of, like, you're paying these guys to go pick up this stuff and move it back and forth. Well, if you have autonomous delivery trucks, like a FedEx truck that's autonomous and there's no one there, then the world is your oyster, right? And so I just started kind of playing with this and said, okay, what I need is an automated – Amazon-style warehouse. I need an autonomous delivery truck, electric, fueled by solar panels that are on top of my warehouse. And what would be really cool is if I had artificial intelligence that could take a picture of what I was putting in the box and create a searchable, editable picture inventory of everything that's in every box. So I don't have to think about boxes. I just go, you know, I want my camping shoes or my camping gear, and these deliver that. Well, Amazon spends $90 million to put together a fulfillment center.
Yeah.
Right? It's like a million, is it $1 million a foot? No, every 1,000 square feet. Autonomous cars are not here yet, and even the most optimistic psycho will say 2021, even though they're in Chandler, Arizona, where I just left right now. You can get autonomous car to take you around. But broadly, it's going to be a few more years. And the artificial intelligence is available. So I cannot do this, right? But timing is so important, I can't wait until it's all available.
Right.
You have to build ahead of time.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you'll just have tons of competitors. And so so I said, okay, well, what I got to do is I got to MVP this thing out, which is minimum viable product. Like, how do I create a service that's like my big vision but doesn't require $1 billion to get started in one city? So we're going to let all the little secrets out of the bag here. I went to Walmart and I picked out a style of box and I bought, I think, like three boxes, because there's something special about three customers. If you can get three customers, you're on to it. I put together a Squarespace website. This is after, you know, noodling on the idea in my head for 2 weeks and then saying, this isn't going away. I have to like yellow pad this out. And it just kept going. This idea just wouldn't let me go. Put together a Squarespace account. You know, my wife is like, why did you do this? I know how to do WordPress. I was like, because I didn't need to ask your help, which I hate doing. And so like, and you think through, how does somebody sign up? How do I actually do all this? What's payment, et cetera, et cetera. And then I start telling people about it. And the first thing that I did was I just take the box. I start walking around with this 3x2 foot, essentially like Rubbermaid box. And everybody says, what's with the box? Like, what's in the box first, right? And so it's a conversation starter. And I start telling people about it. And then you start to get people who say, you know what, I'll do it. Because I priced this deal ridiculously inexpensive. Now, I think it's a profitable price with all my automated vision for 5 years from now. And so I'm always going to build everything around, like, where does the vision go? And so it's $3 a month for every box you want to store, which is about 6 square feet, which is half as expensive as a self-storage unit. Self-storage unit's about $1 nationally. It's 97 cents nationally per square foot. This is 50 cents. And then the kicker is I want it to be as inexpensive as possible and as easy as possible. Like, the friction to sign up, to engage in the service, is as low as possible. Because if I'm going to make this huge capital investment in automated warehouses and all that stuff, I got to have, like, everybody's got to be my customer. I got to have hundreds of thousands, millions of boxes in Atlanta. And so I say, I'm going to offer free and unlimited pickup and delivery. And when I look at other people who are doing stuff like this, I mean, they're talking about their average ticket is $180 a month. They have 6 month, 12 month contracts. You got to pay $65 an hour for the labor guys to come over and pack your stuff up. And I said, look, this is for someone who just wants to get their, for lack of a better word, their stuff.
Yeah.
They want access to it, but we don't want possession, right? So everybody who's, you know, Zen minimalist, the simple lifestyle, like, we want access to things. We don't want to be surrounded by our stuff.
Right.
And so if I could get it out but make it easy and accessible to them, then I think that would really be something different. And that's a new category called micro storage on demand, which I just started, which says we're taking the container box from global shipping and bringing it down to 3x2 for individual consumers to store their things and have back whenever they want. Right now, our promise is 24 hours. We want to get that down to like Amazon Now type, right? Like 2 hours, but I don't want to, I got to underpromise. Got to underpromise and overdeliver. So we're getting to people a lot faster than that right now. Our website is myinfinitecloset.com. Everybody can sign up to try it out. There's no, you could do it for one night and it's 10 cents.
Oh, wow.
Just try it out. So give me a dime. It's 10 cents. But so that was the whole idea. And you just start working your way through this incredible book called Disciplined Entrepreneurship. Literally, it's the playbook for like this kind of an idea. And it just takes you through customer discovery and marketing and all that stuff. And so that's how it came about. And we're growing. And I appreciate you giving me some love on Instagram.
Yeah.
And
yep, I'm a customer.
It's pretty great.
Love the idea. And you know, what I love about that is going back to that side hustle idea. I mean, you still have another job, but this is like something you're pouring all of your side time into with the potential for you, with the potential that it could become a full-time business. But most people who are doing side hustles now, like I said, they don't want to quit their jobs.
Yep.
They actually love their jobs. They just want to have a little bit more freedom or have a creative outlet or that kind of thing. And I think that is what is going to transform entrepreneurship and to have a whole bunch of new ideas come out there. And so, do you want to add anything else?
Yeah, if I could say one more thing, I would say that one of the big mistakes that people make when they're thinking through an idea is they think they need to see the full, complete picture from A to Z. And if they can't see A to Z, then they don't do A. And the answer is that the board is always changing and your position changes on the board as you step forward.
Yeah.
And so you don't know what getting started will allow you to have going forward because you just can't see A to Z. And so when you get started, first off, people are impressed by it, that you just try it. And then some of them are going to want to help you. And then you're going to meet people and actually have a reason to talk to them now that you had no reason to before. And that's why having this bias for action coupled with a culture of failure acceptance to say, you know what, I'm not going to get burned reputationally if this doesn't work out, because this is what this place does. Yeah. Is people are willing to try and support local initiatives and new people who are trying things out. And you can know that things are going to change. We know that's a constant. So all I'm going to do is basically step out in faith and say, we're going to find out where the board is when I get to the next square. And then we'll play the game from there.
Well, Kevin, thanks so much for coming on the podcast today.
Thank you so much. It's been my pleasure.
Well, thank you so much to Kevin for coming on the podcast and helping to demystify entrepreneurship and help explain what it is about our community that makes it such a great place for entrepreneurship. What I love so much about Kevin's story is that he didn't even know Tiffany Robinson. He just sent her an email to get coffee. And like Tiffany said, that's just what we do here. So this episode comes with a challenge. Email somebody or drop them a message on LinkedIn or Twitter. Somebody in our city that you don't know but have always wanted to meet and learn more about what they are up to, and offer to get them coffee. You'll be surprised how open people are in Chattanooga and are as eager to get to know you and what you are passionate about as you are to get to know them. Just try it and see where it leads. I do want to take a moment and encourage you to check out Kevin's new company, Infinite Closet. My wife and I have been using his service for a few months now, and we love it. And really, right now is the perfect moment to try Infinite Closet. It's Christmas, and the week after Christmas, you're going to be putting away all of those decorations, and then you are going to have to store them for the next year. This time, head over to myinfinitecloset.com. There's a link in the show notes, and sign up and get a box. Kevin will drop it off, you fill it up, he'll come pick it up from your house and store it for just $3 a month. It will be out of sight and out of mind until after next Thanksgiving. Then you just shoot him a message and he'll bring it right over. It's an incredible service and I hope you check it out. That's myinfinitecloset.com. As always, I want to thank the library and Dynamo Studios for allowing me to record this episode there on the second floor of the downtown Chattanooga Library. And a special thank you to my engineer for this episode, Meredith Levine. And thank you all for downloading and listening. This is the last episode for the year 2017, and we'll be taking a month off and really planning out the first half of 2018. So if you've enjoyed the podcast and there's something happening in the city that you want to learn more about, please shoot me an email at matt@missionchattanooga.org. And you can also find me on Twitter at mattjames24 or at the Camp House as well. I'd love to hear from you, and I would love for you all to give us a rating and a review wherever you get your podcast from. Again, thank you all for listening. I hope you've enjoyed it, and have a Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.